Welcome to the Women Trouble panel. In case you can't tell, I am not a woman. The beard may be a giveaway, or depending where you come from, it may not. I'm also obviously not American, so I do apologize for the lack of subtitles in front of me. You'll just have to bear with me. I am from Scotland, of course, and my name is Russell McLean. I'll be moderating this panel. I'm tempted to control some of the most kick-ass women I've ever met in my life. I'm absolutely petrified up here and sweating.
Loving it.
Oh, I am loving it. It's wonderful. If anybody can take a picture, you know, that'd be quite good. Russell's Angels. Anyway, oh dear. At some point I'm going to say something wrong, they're just all going to set on me and it's not going to be a good thing. Or it might be. From left up to right, we have, of course, the wonderfully kick-ass Krista Faust, the badass Karen Olsen, the incredibly scary Laurie Armstrong, the absolutely lovely Judy Clemens, but I wouldn't cross her, and of course, on the end, Lauren Henderson, who is truly terrifying. All of them are wonderful writers, and they all tend to write about women protagonists who are very, very strong, or certainly in the world and male-dominated worlds. And I'd just like to start, because we've been told we're talking about badass and kick-ass women, and bad girls particularly. But I was just wondering what you guys thought, how you would define a bad girl, particularly in crime fiction at the moment. Is it more than just a femme fatale, or is it a strong woman, or how do you feel about women's representation in crime fiction at the moment?
Well, I mean, you could go either way. I mean, you could say bad as in wicked, a negative character would be a bad girl, but you could also use bad as in badass. I mean, you know, it seems almost as if it's more of a film thing, but it's been filtering down into crime fiction lately that you have a very kind of hollow and phony bad girl, which in my opinion is nothing more than just, you know, a tough guy in high heels. I mean, for me, a genuinely tough female character is still a female. You know, it's not a 98-pound supermodel who can punch a 200-pound guy and he'll fly across the room and go through the wall. You know, a really genuinely tough female character maintains her femininity in addition to being tough.
I think it's all about being in control. When I started writing my Annie Seymour series, I decided I was going to do the anti-Oprah book. Because all the Oprah books I was reading talked about, you know, they had these women characters who were all victims. And everybody took advantage of them, and they were these horribly pathetic, depressing people. And I decided, you know, I have a daughter, and I said, you know, I want to write a book with a woman protagonist who's strong and who's in control of her life and who kicks ass. And so that's sort of where that whole idea came from. And then I've written also a tattoo shop mystery series with a tattooist who solves crimes, which is a little silly. But she owns her own business. She's very confident in herself. And I think that can be pretty kick ass.
Yes, you can.
I think for me, with a kick-ass woman is a woman who doesn't need a man to take care of her, doesn't need to make her decisions. She can take care of herself. That doesn't mean she doesn't want a man. That doesn't mean she's not feminine. But it's, you know, she is completely 100% capable of making her own decisions in her life, and that's how she lives her life. And if a man stumbles into her life and improves it somehow, then that's a good thing for her. But she doesn't, you know, she isn't one who needs rescuing. And I think that's the difference between a kick-ass character and a character who may be a strong woman who is someone you want to know, but she's not necessarily going to be a kick-ass character. I was asked this question on a panel a couple of years ago, and I was with writers who didn't write the type of character that I write, and they all said, well, I think, you know, someone who stands up for what she believes in. I mean, I think that makes a really strong female character, but that doesn't make her a kick-ass character. So I think that there is a distinction about what, you know, where you're going to draw the line.
I guess I'll add that I think, too, it's part of going against the world, what the world views as a woman, and doing some of those things that are traditionally male things. you know, like running your own business or you know, some of those things that people might not expect you to do, and being independent about it too.
Well, I've actually written a book called Bad Girls, so thank you, Russell, for letting me get my title in early on. I started out writing a crime series, and I absolutely, the first thing that Krista said was, you know, there are some kind of almost kind of fake ideas of what strong women are, and they tend to be, you know, a guy. I always used to say, you know, Philip Marlowe with, you know, ladies, please. But, you know, or, you know, high heels or however we want to say it. But really, I started writing because I wasn't reading about women like me. And in the time since I started the Sam Jones series, which is a while ago now, it's changed so much. I mean, to have this discussion 15 years ago, it would have been really hard to actually think of a lot of people who we thought embodied this. And now there are so many. You could have filled this panel, you know, 15 times over with women who write, you know, strong characters, which is fabulous. And actually, I've started writing bonkbusters, which is sort of the term that in England we use for kind of Jackie Collins type books. And my heroines tend to start out in the bonkbusters just completely hopelessly messed up. You know, they're kind of supermodels addicted to drugs, or, you know, strippers in need of redemption, which is actually quite Christerish as well, I suppose. But having written strong women for ages, it's been really fun, because a bonkbuster is also standalone, to take characters and get them to the independence at the end. And maybe that's the difference. In the crime world, you have to kind of prove yourself almost straight away or you'll be dead. Whereas in a bonkbuster, you can have a lot of adventures and hot tubs and gradually find yourself. I'm quite sure I meant to say that. It's so early, so go with me.
Sorry, there we go. I'll swallow the drink there. No, it's good that you mentioned Bad Girls this early, actually, because it's the one of the books I managed to read every panelist book in preparation. It's such a hardship it was to... Not really. It was absolutely wonderful. They're all brilliant. But Bad Girls was a book that I would not have read otherwise, because, of course, this whole bonkbuster thing, there's a certain male part of me goes, that's a book for women, isn't it? And it's a horribly sexist male part of me. I'm so... Please see men in the audience. I was just wondering, though, how you've had male readers react to you, because, of course, there's this whole perception that we don't read women or we're put off by strong women. Quite the opposite, I can tell you. So I was just wondering how male readers have reacted to your books, and in particular, if any have reacted to Bad Girls at all.
Bad Girls is sort of, I mean, it's very big. These books are very big. They're over the top. I write them under the name Rebecca Chance, I ought to say, so that my mother cannot read the sex scenes. So far it's going really well. But in fact, my 8-year-old nephew now knows. I actually went back to school this term and they said, what books had he been reading on holiday? And he said, I haven't read it, but do you know Bad Sisters by Rebecca Chance? My auntie wrote it. And I was like, my mother is going to find out in 2 seconds. And my sister's actually now reading the audiobook, which is embarrassing for me, but I'm going to try not to think about it too much. Anyway, those are very, what you got, Dynasty Dallas. So obviously, I have a lot of gay fans, which I love because I'm a big fruit fly or fag hag, as we say. So a lot of gay guys. I mean, I think straight guys, they're not so much for straight guys, though if they read them, obviously that would be lovely, and I think they probably learn quite a lot.
I did. My girlfriend thanks you.
Hey, so can I jump in here? I gotta say, one thing that I was really actively trying to do with my novel Money Shot was to try to get readers from both ends of the gender spectrum to read something that they may not normally have considered. So, you know, if I'm going to pitch it to a guy, it's like, yeah, it's a hot porn star who, you know, gets two-fisted revenge against the men who fucked with her. And guys are all over that, right? But this is a novel about a woman who's over 40 who is dealing with aging and what it means to be beautiful and then to lose that beauty, you know, and that is not a topic that your average straight guy would have any interest in reading about, but they're reading Money Shot and they love it. Meanwhile, on the other end of the spectrum, you know, I can pitch to women, you know, here's this novel about body image and loss of beauty and what does it mean to have your entire life be about selling your beauty and have that taken away.
I actually more like your pitch to men, actually. I like the porn star with the two-fisted revenge myself.
But see, and I'm wondering if you can write my jacket copy for my next book.
But, you know, it doesn't matter which side appeals to you. You know, what I'm hoping for is to get people who would never read a hard-boiled novel to check it out, and people who would never read a novel about women's issues with aging. You see what I'm saying? You can get both ends into meet in the middle.
As the porn star says. Sorry.
I should have warned you, by the way, this may be 8:30 in the morning, but there may be some language. Some bad and worse. All from that end.
Well, and I think that for me, because I write a female army sniper, what means the most to me is when I hear from military men who have read the books and have said, I would serve with her. You know, she's a stand-up character. That probably is my only gender type thing. That's what I appreciate more than anything. But I think that, to be honest, I think the cover has a lot to do with whether or not people will pick you up. I mean, that's, you know, you wish that it wasn't that way, but if you have a cover where there's a, you know, something that is going to touch somebody's hot button, they're like, I'm never going to read a book that's got a cover like that, then it doesn't matter.
What, you mean like this?
That's an awesome cover.
I
totally understand about the cover thing, because my tattoo shop mystery series, when they were designing the first cover for the first book, The Missing Ink, they also have puns in the title, which doesn't appeal to men either. They said, do you have any ideas for a cover? And I said, well, I don't really care as long as it's not pink. If you've seen the cover of The Missing Ink, it is bright pink. And I did have a couple of men email me and say that they, you know, got in touch with their feminine side and actually brought it out in public and read it in public, which I thought was kind of cool. But the covers are very cozy looking, and, you know, I am published by a publisher that does cozies, but I tried not. I mean, I have a tattooist who solves crimes. I mean, it really can't be that cozy. But you have to get past the covers first. But that's the marketing, you know, which is unfortunate.
And we don't really control that.
We have no control over that. Although I did have a male fan come up to me at a conference once and say that he had never read any crime novels by women at all. And he picked up my first book, which was Sacred Cows, and said he was a total convert and he was starting to read books written by women. And that made me feel really, really good.
So would you say that the publishers are more concerned then with marketing towards gender than you are about writing towards?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the readers as well. Of course, I don't think in the end we care as long as it's a well-written book. So,
I know. I get as much mail from men as I do from women with my books, but my first series, a lot about motorcycles. And so that appeals to men. And my second series has a Hapkido black belt in it, so there's martial arts stuff too. So, but especially with the motorcycles, I hear from men.
Mm-hmm. You write like tough girl ones. Have publishers actually said, we want you to do initials instead of your first name? Because I do notice there is this kind of classic thing that a lot of women will be strongly suggested to have initials instead of a first name, because a guy won't pick up a book with a woman's name on it. Having said that, I think women read 70% of fiction, don't we, Russell?
Allegedly so, yes.
So, in a way, I mean, it's lovely to have the guys, but, you know, and we don't get the nominations, but, or, you know, the awards statistically, but the readers are women, so I often wonder why.
Well, I was told when I first started writing that I've not to write for. I was a relatively young man when I started out. I feel like I've aged 40 years in the last three. But I was told that as a young man, I was not to write for young men reading crime. That I was to write. My average reader, according to a top agent who shall not be named, and you know who it is, yes, was 40-year-old unemployed housewives who watch CSI. That's what I was told to write for. And who don't want too much blood either. Which I thought was the most incredibly sexist thing I'd ever heard.
How can you watch CSI and not like blood? That doesn't make sense.
Don't ask me, I didn't make it up. But it is that whole thing where I think publishing does tend towards, they have this whole idea that there are women readers and that women readers will read women and that men will read men and all the rest of it, and it's quite a strange
statistic. One of the reasons it's lovely writing bonkbusters is that the publisher knows exactly what to do with it. I have never been, I do young adult mysteries for America, and actually that's, you know, it's all young girls, so again, both of my situations right now, the publisher knows exactly what to do with them and who they're selling to. And in fact, for readings now in England, instead of going to bookstores, they're taking me to the clothes show and, you know, catwalk things, and you feel quite large, but it's hilarious. And it's where your readers are who are going to want to buy that book. And crime almost feels slightly behind in that way, but, you know, there isn't that focus. And as Karen's saying, you know, people haven't figured out that if you put a pink cover in the book, guys aren't going to pick it up, and I don't blame them. I wouldn't either if I was a guy. Do you know what I mean? I guess it. So it's a shame that, you know, or there's the cover, you know, there's the literary crime thing where there's the figure walking away. It's a photograph, and there's a dark figure walking away, and there's a tree in the background that you've seen like 300 times. There can be a little make it look like everything else, and that's always a bit of a disappointment.
So publishers are to blame for all the sexism in writing, which is good. Apologies to any publishers here, especially if they publish any of us. We're not talking about you, probably. although, I mean, again, it's talking about the writing thing. One of the many things that men often get a bum rap for, and we get a bum rap for many things, is writing unconvincing women that we're often told. And I was just wondering if you, because of course you're all women writers and you're all writing mostly about women and things like that, and you write very well, things like that, yes, these things, you know, these women's things. She said vagina. But I was just wondering, from your own reading and things like that, if you thought there were any men who really successfully wrote about women characters, or any kick-ass women characters yourself, or
how about that Tanya Carver?
Transgendered, of course.
Yeah, good question. I've been noticing lately, I do like to read thrillers by men. I enjoy them. But so even some of my favorites, I do get tired of the women who all look spectacular. They all haven't gained an ounce since they knew him before. They still look young. They still look fit. And I get really tired of that because, you know, when you look around at most of us who aren't 20 anymore, we don't look the same as we did when we were 20, you know? And we can look good in different ways, but I mean, I get tired of that, even from the really good men writers that I like. That's not realistic, and that's one of my pet peeves, I guess.
Yes, and Krista was mentioning the really thin women, and I saw the trailer for Columbiana with Zoe Saldana. Has anyone seen that?
God.
I mean, I didn't mind with Buffy because she's got superpowers, but that little thing, honestly, you could just reach out and snap her like that.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
I box, all right? I'm 110, all right? I box. I know what I can do, all right? And there is no way in hell I could be on PCP, you know, and if I punch a 200-pound guy, he's going to shake it off and shoot me. It's that simple. You know, I mean, I could be a sniper. There's absolutely no reason why a woman couldn't be as effective as a sniper. But when you're talking about hand-to-hand, you know, kicking ass and punching and fighting, give me a break. You need a sandwich. All right, you know what makes power? Food makes power.
Are we back to the porn star? Sorry.
You can't fight.
No, I do think women tend to write, you know, women aren't writing 110-pound girls who can take down enormous great men. One of my great role models and inspirations is Peter O'Donnell, who wrote the Modesty Blaze series, which if people haven't read, I strongly recommend. And Modesty in that is super tough because she was a refugee and really had to fend for herself. But I really don't think Peter ever did anything in the books that you didn't feel that Modesty could realistically not have done. There was never kind of that fantasy element to it.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, when I was working on Money Shot, one of the things that I worked really hard to do is I said, okay, here's a character. She's not, you know, a kung fu expert. She's not a ninja. She's not a sharpshooter. She's an ordinary woman. You know, she's an ordinary woman with an ordinary build, with an ordinary life. You know, and now all of a sudden it's been turned upside down, and now she has to fight. And she doesn't have skills, she doesn't have magic powers. She's not a superhero. She's ordinary, and that was really a challenge for me, is figuring out, okay, how do you take care of that 200-pound guy? You know, because punching him in the face is not going to work.
Well, and I like the male authors who write the females who automatically fall into bed immediately with the male character. You know, we're just like, they got that look, and it's like, I'm taking my clothes off right now.
That's what happens to us all.
That's
really
the most
autobiography, I think, Russell's saying.
Well, are they sleeping with every woman in the book?
Or they're a bitch initially, and then it's like, well, I'm going to do you anyway, you know?
Yeah. I think Lee Child's pretty good at that kind of thing. I mean... I was actually, Bad Sisters has been doing well in England and was directly under Lee's latest book in W.H. Smith, and I took a photograph and kind of posted it on my Facebook page and went, you know, finally, under Lee Child, where so many women have tried to be. Which I think he thought was funny. I hope. But I think his women are pretty good, and I think there's also an element in the book, if everything is, you know, Reacher is obviously, you know, kind of like a fantasy himself, but also Reacher, for instance, is very good looking. So I think we all probably mind it a lot less if heroes are very attractive themselves and then the women are proportionately attractive. I think we probably object to that less than kind of average guys getting the supermodels one after the other. Does everyone agree or not? No, they just looked at me.
Well, I know where my sympathies lie.
I don't know. I always find that, I mean, it's not that there's nothing wrong with a nice, you know, kind of fantasy escapism, you know, in a novel, but I mean, I'm a noir fan. You know, I want ugly. You know, that's what I enjoy as a reader. You know, is I want to see dark, fucked up, ugly characters hurting each other. You know, I don't want to see gorgeous people.
So maybe you don't want Chris to write in your blurb after all.
No.
We're about to get Dr. Phil on stage to deal with some issues that some people have.
How's that working out for you?
Fantastic. And laid all the time.
That's right. There we go.
We may have water over Russell's head at some stage.
I was warned about this, but I'm not wearing any. You can't see under the table, you don't know. I was going to ask, to flip it over a little bit, because, you know, I feel that it's unfair asking about how badly we write female characters, because we're all, I mean, I do write so many supermodels into my book, all falling into bed with the hero and etc. In fact, there's been no sex in my book so far, I'm disappointed. I should get better at this. I was going to ask how difficult you found it writing for us gentlemen. Your male characters, yes, creating us and getting in, because if it's so difficult for us to get into your headspace and create you, do you find it difficult to create us at all as our supporting, because we're always very supporting in the books to the female characters, it seems, you know, where we never seem to put a word wrong or whatever in certain places.
Yeah, I love writing male characters. I've never had a problem writing male characters, and I mean, I've never had a problem writing characters who are not me. Because everybody loves to say, like, oh, is that you? Did you pose for this cover? You know, are you really Angel Dare? It's like, no, I'm a professional liar, folks. I make shit up for a living.
But you posed for the one in the front.
Yeah, actually, this is me, actually. No, I love to write about male characters, you know, and I like to write about characters who are different than I am, because it's a stretch. It's entertaining. It's like working the writing muscle. It makes you... push yourself.
Well, I also write contemporary erotic westerns under another name, so I, in those books, yes, I know. I was wondering if you were going to bring that up. In those books, I write from both male and female point of view. In the mysteries, I write strictly from the female point of view, so it's a nice, like she was talking about, stretching my, you know, mental muscle. It's nice to be able to write from a male point of view, and, you know, muscle and erotic, yeah, I get it, okay.
I'm 15 years old, okay.
But yeah, I don't think it's difficult to write a different... Someone said to me, I read an article about a person who said, how can you write a different sex? How can you write a different color? How can you write, you know...
a different religion. And I'm like, because I'm not that person. You know, I'm taking what I know and changing it. And I think what Krista said too is a lot of people think that you are who you write, and that's not necessary, and that's boring. I mean, nobody wants to hear about me going to the grocery store, you know. So those type of things, you can, you know, you can incorporate them. So writing men isn't any harder than it is to write a woman who's not me. You know, every character has different challenges. So
I just finished writing a book from a male point of view, and I actually had two men read it to just sort of see, you know, what their opinion was. And one of them told me that the character was not enough of an asshole. He was too nice. And the other man told me that he was too much of an asshole, and I had to make him nicer. So I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing, and I left it as it was.
So men basically don't know what we want or...
Absolutely not.
Well, and I think another thing, too, is, you know, you hear that old thing of write what you know. You know, and obviously we're not men writing... because we're men, but we've all known a lot of men, you know? So I think...
we're not murderers either.
Right. So we have seen a lot of men. We've all dealt with a lot of men. I mean, just like men, you know, can write about women for that reason, too. I think it's just part of taking that part of your life and using it.
You know, I'm going to disagree with everyone and say I'm always a bit nervous about writing men, actually, or straight
Thank
men
you.
Anyway. I love men, but they are quite different to me, and I do have to think about it. And it doesn't. It's something I do have to concentrate more. And there's always that temptation just to make them just adjust their willies a lot so you remind yourself you've got a male character.
We do that.
No, but it's kind of... And in the Bonkbusters particularly, or in fact in all my books, I think often, or almost always, it's the women who are the worst villains. I think my subject that I'm very interested in is women with each other, as it were. Not to go too innuendo-esque right now. But to me, it's women's worst enemy is so often other women that I... I'm more interested in that in a way. And certainly in the Bonkbusters, you know, the heroes, you know, obviously there's a lot of sex, which is fun. And maybe it's something that I'm more aware of writing the Bonkbusters, because you can't really have too much sex in a crime novel. You can't. It doesn't work. But yours are noir. Yours are noir. That's different. Noir, you can have more, but still, I've got more in mind. I've got more in mind than anybody else has, because that's kind of what the books are about. The books are about kind of like, you know, enormous great sex scenes. And the guys actually tend to be quite sweet and almost, you know, sexy, but also kind of hapless, I suppose, as well, really. And it's the women who are sort of, you know, worse. And I just find that more interesting, and maybe as sort of what my friend Jenny, who's very intellectual, would call third wave feminism. I do sometimes think that women can be worse to each other than men can be worse to us. I mean, Sarah Palin scares me much more than, sorry to offend anybody here, than, you know, male politicians. And, you know, quite a lot of other women, Tea Party, scare me a lot more than male politicians, and I think want to take away more things from women than the men do. So it's certainly not, I don't, you know, presuppose from thinking men are the enemy. But yes, actually, I end up writing nastier women.
In my experience, that's probably true. No, it's very funny that you're all talking about how easy it's right, because this whole thing about women supermodels that all my male characters fall into bed with and things like that. I often find that we're represented with six packs and you know, always say the right thing, and it's never true. I'm flabby and ill-timed, shall we say? No,
you're here, Russell.
Yeah, no, I was going to say not in the department. Some of you sniggering out the back are thinking, "Thank you very much." I can't believe it.
Just keep talking.
Yes, I know. I'm just going to keep talking now. There we go. Keep going. Yes. Because I was. I mean, you actually preempted one of my later questions, actually, there, Lauren, which was about the sex in crime novels, particularly, and whether you feel, because it's a question that has to come up, I suppose, when we're talking about gender and things, whether you feel that it's better to avoid it or keep it in, or, you know.
All right, see, here's the thing. The mistake that most authors make when they're writing sex scenes is they write a totally throwaway little, like, you know, softcore porn scene that's meaningless, that's interchangeable, that's irrelevant, has nothing to do with the story. The way I always say is, I say, all right, watch somebody eat. You know, when you watch somebody eat, it tells you a lot about who they are. The way that they deal with their food, the way they handle their food, they put their arm around their food and shovel it in real quick, maybe because they had a lot of siblings or they were in jail. Somebody might take their food if they don't eat it fast enough. Do they cut it into a million teeny tiny pieces and shove it around on their plate but not actually eat? It tells you a lot about who they are. Sex is the same way. If you write a sex scene and you can cut it out and you don't miss it, it shouldn't be there. But it's an incredibly powerful tool to talk about characterization and what people are really genuinely like. You know, because sex isn't always beautiful. And I'm a huge fan of the ugly sex scene, the awkward sex scene, the uncomfortable sex scene. Because, you know, people always default to this sort of music video, hair whipping, everybody's ripped to shreds, everybody orgasms at the same time. It's like this, you know, how often does that really happen?
You know, I can actually add something in there, which is that when I started writing the Bunkbuster books, and I was looking at, does anybody used to read Judith Krantz or... anybody? Yes. Excellent. We'll talk later. But one thing I really noticed about them was that the central lovers always had this ghastly soft focus music video scene where they both would orgasm together and they hold each other and say they love them. But the really hot scenes were the villainess and the pervy henchman. And I'd always be like, well, when I came to write them, I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. I want the hot scenes to be between the hero and the heroine. So that probably means they're not going to have this, you know, perfect soft focus scene. They're going to have the kind of real sex that we all have, but obviously, you know, just bigger and better because it's a Bunkbuster. And that's been so much fun to write and come up with and not do the, you know, I love you and holding each other too much, because it's really naff. And also, it's not what the readers want either. Do you know what I mean? You're not reading the books for that. You're not reading sex scene to kind of like get excited just because two people are kind of stroking each other and staring into each other's eyes.
Yeah.
So it's been really fun to center that. And I think that because times have moved on and women are able to express themselves much more, and we've had Nancy Friday in all these books, everybody loves it. You know, there's no embarrassment now about thinking, oh, the heroine's a good girl, so, you know, she has to be over there with the nice guy. You know, or she has to have dirty sex with the Italian prince but then find the nice American man to settle down with and have babies. You know, she can actually have dirty sex with the Italian prince and marry him and go on having dirty sex with him.
I do just want to reiterate again that it doesn't have to be hot sex. It can be cold sex. It can be uncomfortable sex. It can be awkward sex. I mean, you know, when you have a character who is miserable, unhappy, having a hard time in life, and then all of a sudden they have this fantastic 4th of July sex scene, it makes no sense. There's no reason for that. You know, so, you know, sex is an incredibly powerful tool for an author, and almost none of us really use it. You know, because we phone in these generic...
But Kristen...
I'm glad for this publisher constraint, because I will tell you that I had a pretty explicit sex scene in No Mercy, and my publisher cut it out, and she said, you are not writing erotic romance, which I guess you maybe thought that was an insult, but as an erotic romance writer, I did not take that as an insult. But yeah, it's publisher constraints, though, because they said, no, we do not want that explicit, you know, sex scene in there.
But well, I had to take the word nipple out of my book. I could not.
In crime fiction, everyone is completely smooth chested.
I could not use the word nipple, and it was in context.
Okay, I got it.
I'm sure it was, Karen.
I got it here. What was the sentence?
All right,
I got it.
The scene was, there was a woman in a hotel room. She had a towel wrapped around her. She walks out of the shower, and the towel slips. And the sentence was, she flashed a little nipple. I had to take it out.
Shocking.
And I was stunned, and I asked my editor, I said, is this your problem or do you think it's my reader's problems? And she said, I think it's a little bit of both. I said, I think it's your problem.
Yeah.
Because it was absolutely, you know, I mean, I can understand, I write for NAL, they don't, you know, they write, you know, they publish the cozy mysteries, no on-scene sex or violence or foul language. I can understand that, but nipple, as far as I know, is not a four-letter word.
I think there is a legitimate side to saying that most crime novels, apart from very specific noir ones, don't work with a lot of sex in. And it is possible, I don't know, that your editor felt that the sex, if the sex is very hot, it really distracts from the mystery, which is a central thing. You know, crime novels, it's the mystery. Erotic novels, it's the sex. Mine, it's kind of a bit of both, really. But I actually get very... I can't say jerked out of the mystery if there is a sex scene, because it's I came into my head and I just went with it, because I do think it is so, sex is so powerful, as Chris is saying, it's a powerful tool, but unless it is a specifically noir novel, I find it disconcerting, because it pulls me to a very different place, and the mystery should absolutely be the central thing that's pulling me through.
But I think, too, that's a chance for you to show a vulnerability of a powerful woman when she's naked in front of a man, regardless of how long she's known him. You know, she's going to show a different side there than she is when she's holding a gun.
And so does he.
And so there's a huge chance for character development there.
Absolutely.
That, you know, it doesn't have to be. And the thing of it is that scene was not 15 pages. It was like a page. And, you know, how much damage can you do in a page?
Not much if you don't mention nipples.
I would also like to say that, I mean, you know, my character, series character, is an adult film star. So... there is a lot of sexuality that is not sex. Because this is not hot sex between two people. This is business. But I cannot write about the adult film industry and cut to the blowing curtains. You know, it's a business. And if you're going to write about a business, you have to talk about what they are doing.
So there you are. I feel we've reached a small climax here.
Hands on the table, Russell. Hands on the table.
Some climax there.
I've been working on that for 5 minutes. If anyone's seen me taking notes, it's... But with about 20-odd minutes to go, I do feel that usually in the last 15 to 20 minutes, it's very wise to open it to... Yeah, thank you. I was trying to avoid the obvious. unless you feel terribly intimidated, and you shouldn't, because they're all wonderful up here, to yourself. So if anybody does have questions, please throw them, and they'll... Yes, up the back, I see your hand.
No, we shoot them in South Dakota if they show up. No, I'm kidding. No, I haven't actually had anybody mention the sports shooting of prairie dogs, which is actually, you know, it's not politically correct, but hey, it's what we do for fun. And it is part of ranch life, so no one has.
No complaints about hurting animals at all, no. Which is, if you hurt a dog, you get thousands of letters of complaints and death threats.
Oh, you know Val McDermid's story at the beginning of The Mermaid Singing, that she could torture a lot of guys to death, but at the beginning of the book, the dog gets it, and the dog is sedated, the dog doesn't feel any pain, and the editor was like, no, you cannot kill an Alsatian, that is not happening.
That's, hand in front.
Laura, you said you wrote under a different name. What is that?
I write under the name Lorelai James.
And that's the erotic westerns?
Contemporary erotic westerns.
Does anyone have a pen? Yes.
Hear something about the inner life of your kick-ass women characters. Do they feel good about what they're doing? Do they, you know, because often, you know, if men are going to write women, they'll be more emotional characters. You talk a lot about the kind of, what are people doing and how they're beating people up and what they can do. What about their emotional lives?
With Angel Dare, part of her arc in that original novel is about shutting off emotion. Because, you know, she isn't a sniper. She isn't a hit woman. She's an ordinary woman. So she has to shut all of that off. It's almost as if the character's put through this alchemical furnace. And all of that is being burned away. And at the end, all that's left is just this very cold-hearted logic that here's what you have to do.
Should we go down or finish? When I was writing Sam Jones, who is my crime series character, Sam, I always said that Sam was like a juggernaut. You know, she's just got the wheels with the spikes on them, and she's going to roll over everyone. And that seemed very natural to me at the time, which is probably a reflection on what I was like in my 20s. And it didn't seem at all unusual to me that she wasn't that guilty. about the things she had to do. I mean, she wasn't, you know, kind of like a stone killer or anything. And I enjoyed that tremendously. It just seemed very natural. And even asking me to analyze it now, I'd almost have difficulty doing it because it really was. You know, my sister used to always say, "You, oh no, I mean Sam." And to be honest, you know, I kind of knew what she meant. But and now I'm doing the Bonkbusters. There's huge amounts of inner life and hair flouncing and screams and meltdowns and people kind of, you know, having to examine their lives in the company of hot Italian princes in hot tubs, as often happens, I find, in life. And it's really nice to write about women who aren't as tough as Sam. You know, I'm actually really enjoying it because, and also I think, and I don't know if everyone else agrees with this, I think there was a pressure in crime, when I was writing crime novels, I really felt I had to, as you would say in America, represent for strong women. And not have a lot of guilt and, you know, sobbing. And now to be able to do it in a different context, you know, in a Dallas one where people are always throwing people downstairs and then having huge hissy fits about it, I'm enjoying tremendously writing that aspect for women. And I think because it's a Bonkbuster, I don't feel, oh God, it's a crime novel. I have to make her stronger, otherwise men will say women are weak. So I think I found the place to write about that I enjoy.
Both of my protagonists are kind of disturbed, but it's not about their gender. It's just more about fitting in the rest of the world with the things they've dealt with in their lives. And my one is on the road all the time, dealing with tragedy in her life. So her stuff isn't about whether she's a woman or not. It's just about trying to find a life that she can deal with. And Stella, my other character, you know, she runs her own farm, she has a motorcycle, she is tougher than all the other women she knows, and that does become a problem for her just because she doesn't fit in really anywhere. So that's part of the issue with her. But neither of them are girly with sobbing and that kind of stuff. It's more a deeper emotional kind of how does this world work for me?
Well, I think what my character is the opposite of Krista. She's learned, she's not a machine, but she has toned her emotions and everything down where she acts instead of, you know, thinks. So when she's out of the army now, she's having to turn around and say, you know, I can't think like that. I have to completely change. I have to be emotionally available. You know, I have to show some of these emotions where she's never really been used to that before. So that's a different kind of a headspace for a methodical character to kind of go into being an emotional character. And it's a difficult kind of a place to write that, especially if you're, you know, my first character, Julie Collins, was very hot-headed. She, you know, she acted first, thought second, and so to go to writing a completely different character is a challenge, but, you know, that's what makes it interesting and fun, keep writing these different type of tough women. Mm-hmm.
My first character, Annie Seymour, is a police reporter, and you know, I started writing that series before newspapers went into their decline, but they were starting. And so while she's very, very tough on the exterior, she knows that she has to be really good at her job or she's going to lose her job. And so she's got this real vulnerability about that. And, you know, there's a young reporter who's sort of on her heels through the series, and she's terrified that she's going to get canned and he's going to get her job. So that makes her, I think, a lot more human when she's trying to be really, really tough. And my tattooist character, Brett Kavanaugh, she's just trying to run her business. She's just very nosy. And, you know, it's an amateur sleuth mystery, so, you know, there are some expectations in that genre that, you know, your character has to be certain things. And I actually made the mistake at the end of the third book, left her saying, I am never going to get involved in crime ever again, and then I had to write another book. And I had no idea what I was going to do with it, and I had to make the crime, like, incredibly personal so that she would have absolutely no excuse but to get involved, because during the entire book, she does not want to be doing this. And it's... So that was a bit of a challenge.
It's
It's very difficult often with these the characters who aren't directly in law enforcement to keep getting them involved over and over and over again.
Well, I said four books. I don't know where she can go from here. She's a wreck. It's all these dead bodies around her, and you know everybody's telling her to stay out of it, and she keeps getting involved anyway. And it's just, you know, normal people don't sit home and watch the TV and say, oh, there's been another homicide in your city, and you're sitting there watching TV saying, you know, I think I'm going to go solve that crime before the police do. People don't do that.
I tried it once. I spent the night in jail afterwards. Didn't go well. We've got another hand. Yep.
In reference to a small woman and the ability to kind of take care of herself, I'm curious what you all think about Steve Larson. And you know, there were scenes where she was physically able to defend herself, and then also in...
I'd just like to say very, very briefly that I don't know of men who've ever written a book where, you know, their main hero got raped. And somehow it's okay to do that with a female character and then make her strong at the same time. And I found that very objectionable. You know, if Lisbeth had been a man, I absolutely don't think that there would have been, you know, scenes in the book, not from the past, but actually in the first book where she got raped, and that was it for me. I'm like, you know, oh, and then she got sexually healed by having sex with an older man. No offense, anybody out there, but you know, I don't think it works like that. So I was gobsmacked by that characterization. Understand the second two. Val McDermott has told me the second two are a lot better to keep going. But I just thought, this is not my idea of a strong woman. And it seemed to me very odd that in order to show how strong she was in his head, he had to make her utterly sexually vulnerable. So I assume that's what you're talking about, and I personally found it extraordinary.
Well, that was another series where he was sleeping with every single woman that crossed his path. I mean,
oh, yes.
I met somebody at the supermarket, yeah. And there they are, you know? I mean,
thought that was the way it happened in Sweden.
Well, it happens to me.
Oh, so it's her build that you're asking about and what she's done, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a total fantasy, basically, isn't it?
On that level, I think that that's more of a male fantasy version of a sexy woman that can fight, as opposed to, I mean, you know, if you want to look at a woman who can fight, you look at Christiane Cyborg, who's the current Strikeforce MMA women's champion at 145.
Is that like the wrestler girls? I mean, look at those wrestler girls, and their bodies are unbelievable. I mean, those are girls that can really handle themselves.
That's the thing. I mean, you know, in my novel Hood Town, you know, I have a character who is very physically strong. She's fat. You know, she weighs 200 pounds. So she can take on a 200-pound guy because she has that size and physical strength. You know, but I think that there has become almost a level of fetishism for the skinny woman punching guys.
Yep.
It's gotten to the point where it's so divorced from reality. Angelina Jolie? Are you fucking kidding me?
At least she's taller and she has shoulders. I mean, you know, it's not as bad as some of them.
I'm sorry, she's tall, but she hasn't eaten in 5 years.
Having said that, they have cast Tom Cruise as Jack Reacher, so maybe, you know, there's a little bit of, you know...
Yeah. They're putting him on stilts.
Definitely. I think there has to be some kind of a fetish that's going on, that guys, geeky guys, are turned on by the idea of a small, skinny, thin woman.
Chris, actually, I don't think it's that. I think the geeky guys want girls with tits. I think it's that a classic feminist analysis would say that the more power we have, the thinner they want us to be, so that they keep us in a state of fear about not being thin enough, and then we won't exercise our power fully and rule the world.
Hey, you can be a thin sniper, all right? You can't be, you know, a thin... fire.
You mean you don't already rule the world? I'm very confused here. We have words with my girlfriend when I get home. Yep, last. Yep. Was there another?
Have you ever written about a strong woman who has men in her life who's threatened by her being able to take care of herself.
So are any of your characters threatened? No, any of your male characters threatened by the female characters? Yeah.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to jump in and say no, because that would not be a type of character that my strong female would be attracted to. She wouldn't be attracted to a man she could beat up.
I was going to say, give us some hope.
I think that, especially just for my character, she isn't, she's looking at a man and he's going to have to accept all of her, or she's not going to be interested. And I think, that's where part of the snap judgment comes in, where it's like, well, this guy is absolutely not for me. She knows that right away, but is she wrong? Does that make sense?
Sexist men, as some question that says, sexist men do exist, so
Also, you're dealing with the idea of sexism and the men who feel threatened powerfully that by
I would guess they tend to avoid every single woman on this panel, so we probably haven't got a lot of experience with them in more recent life. Am I right, ladies?
Well, and I don't find writing about sexist men interesting. I don't like sexist men, and so I don't like writing about them.
Well, I think it's very easy to fall into cliche. And I'm not interested in writing about a male chauvinist pig any more than I'm interested about writing about a 98-pound girl who kicks ass. Those are two ends of the cliche spectrum. And for me, the characters that are interesting are complex and gray, and they have all sorts of contradictions within themselves. Those are the characters I want to read about, and those are the characters that I want to write about. So a shallow, simple, sexist, ordinary guy. I mean, you'll notice that nowadays you see a film, who's the villain? Over 40 corporate white guy. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, over 40 corporate white guy trademark. Over and over. And that's so tired. It's just such a ham-handed, tired cliche. Why would you want to write about that? You can write about a man who has issues with women, but you make him complicated. What are the issues with women? What do they mean? Why does he feel that way? Make it real. Make it mean something.
And I think none of us seem to be writing the kind of books where you do get that kind of extreme sexist guy who's got kind of like girls being tortured in the basement. I mean, that's sort of, there's an entire genre of that kind of thing. And I don't particularly want to write that myself.
Yeah, but even the male villains, and I mean, at least in the work that I've read from some of the ladies on the panel and my own, villains, they shouldn't be cardboard either. You want your villain to be as complex and interesting as your hero. Mm.
There and then there, and I think, we've got three. Yeah, well, we've got time for three more. So there, then there. We'll start. Yes. Scott.
Yeah. There was a thing on Valhalla where somebody was talking about how there's like the death of the ironic thriller, and there's a lot of authors nowadays that are scared to touch sexuality, but I kind of realize a lot of the women authors now are really discussing that, and a lot of the female characters are, I don't want to say sexually aggressive or obsessed, but they're dealing with their sexual obsession. A kind of a wild character with Mercy and yours is someone with, she was a good guy. Your character does, Krista, and I know Megan Abbott deals with that a lot. And do you feel kind of in some way that polite literature, that kind of like the post, like you ladies are all kind of like after, super after, and kind of the generation that kind of broke through, that that's kind of one of the things you ladies are kind of introducing into the genre?
I think it's safer for us. I certainly think that, the Sue Grafton era would have been a lot harder for women to do it then than it is now. I think it's all very... Having said that, my bonkbusters aren't published in America because publishers are worried that the sex scenes are too explicit, even though they're not really crimey. And what I'm really noticing is you get all this supernatural fantasy in which you can write the rudest things ever. I'm sure everyone's, aware of Laurel K. Hamilton and the Sharon and Kenyons and all those kind of books. And those are filthy, which is, I mean in a good way. But it...
more for the reading list?
It seems to be that you can do that as long as you're having sex with an alien or a werewolf or a vampire. You can do whatever you want. But if it's actually two human beings who aren't going to, you know, who aren't undead or going to change into a dog halfway through, then you can't sell it. And I think it's kind of an insult to American women to say that they won't read that kind of thing. But certainly publishers think that you can only do, you can have the kind of Jennifer Cruzy cozy books where it's kind of sexy but you don't get all the descriptions of the bits. Or you can have that, but you can only have that in the paranormal. So there are still barriers to be broken in this country, which, you know, we don't have, we don't seem to have in Europe, which I'm sure everybody will
again,
think is
because you're imposed barriers, not reader sure. imposed barriers.
Yeah, but would a female reader accept that a woman had sex as many times as Jack Reacher?
Yes.
Yes. That's like an average
yes.
Friday for me.
Yes. Yes. Your characters, Christy. Your characters, darling.
Oh. You know, I think that's, you know, that's one thing too, is that there still is a little bit of that, you know, she's, if she likes sex, she's a slut theory that we have not breached completely. And it doesn't matter what age. It doesn't matter if you're writing 20, 30, 40, 50-something yeah. woman. If she's a sexual woman, a lot of times I think that turns people off, and I don't, you know, I don't know why.
Well, one thing that was very interesting for me, you know, about writing a character who's an adult film star is, you know, I mean, it's a business. You know, this is a job. You know, and if you are a dancer, you know, you get up on stage and you do this incredibly physical thing, but you're not in love. You're doing your job. And that, I think, was hard for a lot of people to wrap their brains around, the idea that a woman could show up and do the job and go home without falling madly, deeply in love.
Yes, and also to have her the center of the book rather than love interest. I mean, I always say, in a way, what we've done is taken the women who were, you know, the love interest or the femme fatale and put them at the center of the book. Yeah. And people often think, oh, I didn't actually want to think that the stripper's got feelings.
Yes. Well, in my Annie Seymour series, Annie is, she meets up in the first book with an old high school buddy, and they have this instant attraction between them, but he's engaged to someone. And in the second book, I have them sort of taking that a little bit further, and my editor said no, because he's engaged. And he has a fiancé, and your readers are going to be disappointed in Annie if she has an affair with somebody who's already committed to somebody else.
Wow.
So I had to change that. So I can't say nipple. I can't say nipple, and I can't have affairs with anybody.
We'll take one. I think we've only got time for the one more. So is it? I think you've had your hand up two or three times up the back. So yes, I'm sorry, I missed you a couple of times. So one quick one, if that's okay.
You can't say the C word.
Yeah, exactly. It bothers me that you can kill people on a fucking page. But you can't say, you know, that people are going to be offended by whatever swear word. That just bothers the hell out of me, you know, and I don't understand why, you know, you're going to read crime fiction and read The Worst of Humanity. You don't think that those people are going to say, oh, gee.
Yeah. Gosh, I hope you won't mind terribly if I just slaughter you now. Would that be all right? Thank you so much. I had to take bitch out of the young adult. I've finished a young adult series and I started another one. And my editor, who is the head of the company but didn't edit the books before, objected to the word bitch being used at all by 17-year-old girls. And I know. Thank you. Thank
my
you.
Memories may be wrong, but
I have to. There's only so much times you can say cow, you know. And I actually went through the previous four books and did a check for bitch and wrote down it comes eight in the fourth, you know, eight times in the fourth book, you know, seven times in the second book. So can I have it eight times in this? But can I have it the median time that there were in the previous four books? And she made me take out a scene where somebody had a lisp. I still don't understand that. But so no lisping and no bitching in young adult, I suppose. I think I probably wouldn't use the C word. People seem to have a big problem with that one over here.
Not but, so much. But, you know, it's funny because I write novelizations and tie-ins also. And I just did one for a TV show called Supernatural, which is about...
Did you get to meet them at all? Did you get to meet them at all?
Yeah, I did a DC scene with the both of them. I didn't get to meet them. But the thing that is here you have two, you know, average American straight men in their 20s. Well, Dean, I think, is 30 by now. But no swearing. And it was like... It was the hardest job I've ever done. Because
what did you say in
dialogue between 20-something straight men with no swearing? On the other hand, there is a character in Chokehold who does not swear. You know, that's part of who he is. He's a Southern man. He was raised a certain way not to use language in front of women. You know, and that has nothing to do with the publisher. That was a choice for the character. And then when he finally does use language, it has a real significance to it.
I still get emails about my Annie Seymour series. I got an email last week from somebody who said, you know, you're a really good writer, but it's really ridiculous to use this language. I was like, okay, that's fine. Someone told me I look like a really nice person, and how could I use language like this? And I was just like...
Are humans embarrassed about the language you use? Are children embarrassed? I'm like...
Oh, that's another one I get is, oh, you have a daughter. You know, I'm like, my daughter's 14. She's heard more words than I have.
That's where you're learning them from.
I do think you have to be careful, though. I mean, going along with what Krista said, I think it has to fit the character. You can't just throw swear words in there because... people say them. I think there are going to be people that swear more than other people, and I think if you're just wanting to use swear words, you know, I think it has to have a purpose in the story to use them.
I think that's absolutely right, and we have overrun ever so slightly, but can I just say thank you very much to all five of my panelists here. They've been brilliant. Thank you, and thank you for coming out. I'm led to believe there will be signings upstairs in the signing room, so thank you very much indeed, and we'll hopefully see some of you up there.